It's July 1st, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. Hey, everybody, thank you for voting. It is July. You are done listening to me banter and beg and plead and tell you to go to Podcast Alley and vote. Thank you all so much. I can't tell you where the roundup ended in the rankings because I'm not here right now. At least not as you're listening to this, or not as I'm telling you this was recorded. This was actually recorded before the end of the month. I'm on vacation as you're listening to this, and so I can't tell you exactly what the final tally is. But again, I want to thank all of you. We really appreciate your showing up and helping promote the show. And we've been doing this since December. Shows no signs of slowing down. So as long as you guys keep listening, we'll keep doing the show. I want to take the opportunity. Like I said, this is a vacation for me. So I wanted to take this opportunity to back the show down a little bit, chill out a little bit, and we're gonna do something a little bit different. A couple of weeks ago, I interviewed the editor of TMO, Brian Chaffin, about Bill Gates. Now, some of you may remember Bill Gates, CEO of Microsoft. You may have heard of him before. Stepped aside at Microsoft, kind of a big deal, or maybe not. We'll talk about whether or not it is, but, you know, Microsoft brings up a lot of emotion. It brings up a lot of hot air particularly among Mac users. So this seemed like a good opportunity to step back, take a look at that situation, and see if there's any recalibrating we have to do now that Bill Gates is gone, and now that a lot of things have changed in the Apple-Microsoft relationship from when that relationship first developed back in the 80s and 90s. So I think it's a really cool interview, and Brian, of course, always has a lot to say on this subject, so it was great to spend some time talking with him. I hope you guys enjoy it. And to find the show notes for this show, there's not a whole lot up there this week, but there is the normal links that we've always got, some background on Bill Gates leaving, and also some other information about stuff that we're doing, like the podcast and Portable Media Expo. That link is up there. So you can find the show notes at macobserver.com/roundup. Let's get into that interview. All right, so joining me this week for the entire show, we're just going to kick back and argue about Microsoft for a little bit while. The editor of the Mac Observer and of iPod Observer and a man of many other extraordinary talents, Brian Chaffin. Welcome back.
Well, that's an introduction. Thank you very much, Ricky.
I felt like we needed to have some... Anyway, let's start with the bottom line here. Bill Gates, I actually said in the introduction to the show, I said CEO of Microsoft. He wasn't the CEO, right? He was the chairman and the chief software architect, I think was his name or title. Is stepping aside his daily duties at Microsoft anyway. So this pseudo-retirement, bottom line, is this going to affect Microsoft at all?
Well, sure. It'll definitely affect Microsoft one way or another. Bill Gates has had a steady hand in the direction that the company has gone and the types of business practices that it has pursued and the kind of products that it has developed. He's been very involved with all those things, and his position as chief software architect, I don't think, was ever any kind of formality. He was definitely, I think, the chief software architect. So it'll have an effect.
Now, there's this perception that Bill Gates is, you know, the world's most brilliant programmer. When people have made movies about Microsoft, the person cast in the CEO role of, the Microsoft-like company was always meant to be Bill Gates, and he was always portrayed as the brilliant programmer. That classification aside, are there particular programming accomplishments, aside from everything else that Microsoft has done, are there particular software programming, computer science accomplishments that Bill Gates has been principally responsible for that we know of.
Absolutely. Most of them go back to the day. It was he and Paul Allen that wrote the software emulator that ran on a mini computer. I'm sorry, the Altair software emulator that ran on a mini computer, so that they could then write the basic programming language for the Altair. And they basically did that in 8 weeks. And in typical Bill Gates fashion, he actually told MITS, the company that made the Altair, that he had already developed this. And when in reality, he hadn't done anything yet. And so they had 8 weeks to make an emulator and then write a programming language that ran in that emulator, and they did it. And I was looking, actually, before we started this interview, I was actually looking for an anecdotal piece of history. And the problem is that it may have been Paul Allen, but I think it was Bill Gates that wrote the interface for talking to a printer for the Altair with paper and pencil on the plane on the way to meet with the MITS guys. And whoever did that was brilliant. I mean, whether it was Paul Allen or Bill Gates, that was no small task. And then he was also very involved with most of the early basic work that Microsoft did for most of the computer platforms that they had BASIC running on. He was very involved with a lot of that. And I noticed that the Wikipedia said that he actually had code that was on shipping Microsoft products as late as 1989.
Which is extraordinary for an executive in a company. I mean, someone that's the wealthiest man in certainly in America and possibly in the world who...
Well, but he wasn't at that time.
1989. I'm sorry.
89, yeah.
Well, that...
But, you know, he was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that is. I thought you said 99, and that I found believe.
That would actually be somewhat stunning, and I would question that too, but I don't have a problem believing 1989. The problem with whether or not he's a great programmer is a kind of a different question from whether or not he was a good programmer. Well, obviously it's a different question, but I mean, I personally don't think that any of Microsoft's products have ever been stellar, with the exception of the stuff that comes out of the Mac business unit. And but you know, they certainly have gotten the job done, et cetera. A BASIC for the Apple platform, for the Apple II platform, was at one point a really good product.
And so it sounds like you're saying he was an incredibly talented software engineering, design mind, but didn't necessarily get himself involved in the best products in the world.
No, I don't think he was incredibly talented. Actually, I really don't think that. I think that he knew exactly how to get the job done and exactly how much of a good enough job would get the job done. As a matter of fact, I think that's one of the most evil things about him. At the same time, while it may be his greatest gift from a business perspective, Bill Gates is the master of good enough.
Now, the master of good enough, Microsoft has been an outrageously successful company by any measure of a company, when you look at the dollars, whether you look at how the shareholders have done, or how their market share is done, or their position in the marketplace now,
or their enormous profits,
or their extraordinary profits, does Bill Gates deserve credit for that business leadership?
Absolutely. Whether or not he was the architect of all of their business models, he was certainly involved with them. And from an early, the whole way that Microsoft played Apple with a contract that Microsoft got Apple to sign that Apple thought was a license for using some Apple technologies and patents in Windows 1.0. That Microsoft successfully interpreted to the courts as being a perpetual license, And which is the sole reason why Microsoft lost, I'm sorry, why Apple lost the case in the 80s when they tried to sue Microsoft over Windows. Apple lost that case not because Microsoft didn't steal anything, but because they had a license that said it was okay to steal that stuff.
And so I mean, it wasn't stealing.
No, not legally. No, Apple gave the farm away. And I can't, well, I don't guarantee it. I wasn't there. I don't really know, but I have talked to some of the people involved in that, specifically Dale Yoakam, who had told me that Apple's interpretation of that contract, what they thought they were signing, was a one-time use permit in exchange for Microsoft developing some software for the Macintosh. And like I said, you know, Microsoft had that contract say something entirely different. And again, I think that's one of the evil things about the company. They've never competed based on their merits. They've always competed or out-competed other companies by clever contracts and clever requirements and by, you know, leveraging their powers from one market to another, you know, all these things. None of their success is based upon the quality of the product.
Now, this is starting to remind me of the story of the guy, and I forget who it is, but I heard about some guy who started with a ballpoint pen and he wanted in a year to barter his way up to a house. And it sounds kind of like that's the story you're telling. They start with whatever they had in terms of the code that they had written initially, and through clever business relationships managed to get themselves at the top of the computer industry where they are today.
Well, sure. I mean, let's pick up another example. I believe this was all Bill Gates. He told IBM that they had an operating system for their new line of personal computers that were actually called personal computers, hence the PC. And of course, once again, they didn't have anything, so they went out and bought it. So DOS was in fact a purchase from another company. It was developed by another company, purchased by Microsoft, and you know, basically quickly rebranded as a Microsoft product and licensed to IBM. And that was the big deal, is the fact that Microsoft licensed DOS to IBM. They did not sell it. This was a first, basically, at the time. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because Altair or MITS also licensed BASIC for the Altair, but you know, there were very few Altairs that were actually sold. So IBM famously said at the time, this would have been in the late 70s, famously said at the time that everybody knows there's no profit, or all the profits in the hardware. That's not an exact quote, but it's pretty close. So everybody knows that all the profits are in the hardware. And rather than selling DOS to IBM for millions of dollars, they licensed it for, I think it was about $50 a pop, thereabouts. $50 for every machine that went out. And IBM didn't care, because they were selling each machine for $4,000. So what did they care? And of course, the funny thing there is that because Microsoft was doing the licensing, when other hardware manufacturers were able to reverse engineer IBM's ROM protections that should have kept the ROM protections that made the personal computer, so that when other companies were able to turn around and reverse engineer that and put out something that was a clone of the PC, Microsoft was there to sell them licenses for DOS, just like they did to IBM. So IBM got screwed. IBM ended up losing their monster share, and, you know, of course, exited the computer business, the personal computer business, entirely recently. It was brilliant. It was brilliant on Microsoft's part.
And it seems that your core issue historically with Microsoft is, as you said before, the idea of good enough. If you know, Bill Gates or the team that eventually was working on DOS wasn't concerned so much with the quality of the operating system as they were with making it good enough to appeal to everyone so that everyone else would want to use that operating system and build their clones.
There were certain things that Microsoft did, and some of this is pretty ancient history to all of us, and so I might miss some details, and I might even get a couple of facts wrong on this. So, you know, anyone's welcome to call up or write in, I should say, and correct me on this. But there were lots of things that Microsoft did that did make DOS appealing to the business world, and part of it was the batch system. so that any schmuck could quickly learn how to make batch scripts that would automate various things. And that became a really big deal. So a lot of business consultants liked getting their clients on to DOS machines because they knew how to make these batch things. And it was really simple. It was really ugly, and it was just good enough. But it was, in fact, good enough, and it was easy to use, and Microsoft pushed that sort of thing, whereas Apple had their nose in the air, and, you know, were much more concerned about making art and, you know, whatnot, and so they alienated folks, didn't provide those same kinds of tools, didn't properly push those same kinds of tools. So,
and so perhaps the libertarian way of approaching this is to say, well, hey, look, Microsoft addressed the issues that were in the marketplace, and so its product got adopted. Apple didn't. They were concerned with art. They were concerned with making a beautiful user experience, but not addressing the needs of a large percentage of computer users out there.
You know, that's your first half of that is a very good point. I don't want to dismiss Apple's losses in the marketplace strictly to their being a snooty company, especially back then. Because that wasn't it. You know, Apple did historically make mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, especially throughout the 90s, or particularly throughout the 90s. Apple's made very few mistakes since Steve Jobs came back in the late 90s. But, you know, from that point from when he left to the point that he came back, Apple made a number of missteps that gave away the entire industry to the Microsoft and Intels and the various PC clone makers.
So let me ask the following question. What is Bill Gates' single most enduring legacy?
You know, on the negative side, I'm going to have to give you two single most enduring legacies. On the negative side, he's given us a computing culture that accepts good enough. And while computers largely have gotten to that good enough stage now. I mean, is, you know, I am on a Windows operating system more days than I'm not, at least for a while, and it's just an ugly operating system to this day. It's just inelegant. It is not intuitive. It's not well built. At least it's not well built for end users.
Well, and judging by their difficulty in preparing it for Vista, it's not terribly well built for their purposes either.
Well, yes and no. I mean, Microsoft has built Windows to be a tool of its choosing, right? To be all of the tools that it feels like it needs to compete, as opposed to trying to build it for its end users. You know, and that's certainly one of the issues with Microsoft. But like I said, This great ill that has been done to the world at the direct efforts of Microsoft and Bill Gates is accepting good enough and accepting the fact that we have billions of dollars in lost productivity, if not, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in lost productivity throughout the world from virus outages and from blue screens of deaths and you know, all these other things. Now, admittedly, Microsoft, I think, has made a lot of headway on those issues in very recent years, but you know, there was certainly a time when viruses would be bringing down entire company networks, and you know, all these things that cost the world billions of dollars in lost productivity. I mean, that's criminal to me. It's just, and it's all because the operating system was crap.
Now, on the other hand, of course, it's created entire industries. The security industries, their consulting industries,
but that's,
huge IT departments.
That's adding in middle layers. That's also sapping billions of dollars of productivity from the world. It's adding costs to products that don't need to be there. It's, you know, it's creating enormous cottage industries for people to fix their mistakes is not a benefit to anyone except for the folks that are in that cottage industry. The rest of the world pays for that stuff.
All right. So let's put Bill Gates aside for the time being. So much for Bill Gates. He's heading off. Let's talk about Microsoft. First of all, what what do you think is, what's going to change at Microsoft? You said that it's going to have an effect now that he's leaving. What, if you were to try to identify some areas, one area, two areas in which Microsoft might begin to head off in a direction it otherwise would not have, what might that or those areas be?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. I don't even have much of a guess besides, you know, just wild stab in the dark guesses. Bill Gates leaving will have an effect on Microsoft. I'm not sure what that effect's going to be yet, but obviously things are going to be different. The direction of the company is going to be different. Steve Ballmer calling most of the shots. Especially with the approach of Vista and all these things. Once Vista actually makes it to market, you know, what is Microsoft going to do then? I don't really think anyone knows, and I would bet that no one at Microsoft knows, and that includes Bill Gates. Maybe that's part of why he's stepping down.
Because he doesn't see the road ahead. Well,
maybe.
Let's talk about the road ahead a little bit. In what markets today is Microsoft gaining ground? Where are they setting new standards? Where are they pushing some edge of some industry? Where are they gaining ground?
No, they're not pushing anything. Microsoft is all about, you know, trying to capitalize on what other folks have done. Microsoft is certainly gaining market share in the console gaming business, and that is a huge, huge industry. You know, at some point that platform might even make some money for the company. they've been making a lot of inroads in high-end corporate database stuff. I doubt that they're pushing any boundaries. I'm not any kind of expert in that particular industry, but I just can't imagine that they're really, really pushing any boundaries there. You know, the funny thing is, when you're king, about the only direction you can go is down. And I think that, you know, Microsoft is forever going to be defending its market share in the personal computer industry. And as long as Apple is firing, and as long as the Linux community is still doing good work, and there are major corporations that are pumping lots of money into Linux, Microsoft is going to be seeing its enormous desktop operating system market share chipped away out from now on. That's rough. You know, that's inevitable.
Now, one of the things I'm really curious about, for the people who were around in the 80s, in the 90s, who were Mac users at that time, there was a sense, I think, among probably the majority of Mac users in the middle of the 90s, you know, in the dark ages, of, in essence, a persecuted minority, where Microsoft was an aggressive, evil thing trying to crush the operating system of choice for the people that used it. Today, Mac users have been on a high with an extraordinary array of products and a really extraordinary development in their operating system over the last 5 years. There's a sense almost, I think, among new Mac users that there's no Microsoft isn't a problem. It's not like Microsoft is crushing Apple. Apple's doing a terrific job. And I imagine that for a lot of Mac users, Microsoft is starting to feel, rather than like the big bad bear in the room, just obsolete. Is there any reason to avoid that sense?
I can't imagine that anyone at Microsoft feels obsolete. That's Apple's gained, you know, maybe 1% market share in this country, maybe a little more than 1%.
Now I'm talking
less
about
than 1% worldwide.
I'm wondering about the Mac users themselves. Is there a reason for Mac users to allow themselves to say, Microsoft, doesn't matter what they're doing, I'm working on a computer that I like?
Yeah, you know, there is some merit to that, in that a big part of why we had this persecution complex was because Apple was continually tanking. You know, they were continually losing market share. They were continually getting smaller. They were continually getting, you know, headlines in the news about this company or that company dumping the Mac, about the you know, this store, that store stopping to carry the Mac, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Apple has reversed most of those things. And Apple is specifically, starting with the iMac, and this is something I've gone on about at length on several occasions, Apple changed the rules by which it competed. It no longer was competing based on, you know, megahertz or price. They were instead competing on issues such as usability and lifestyle. And by doing so, they became the only company that was doing that, and they were the only company besides Dell making a profit on their personal computers. So at first, while that was happening, Apple was still facing issues such as decreasing profits, if not losses, and decreasing sales and decreasing market share, etc., even while the company was tightening up. But like you said, of late, in large part because of the iPod, Apple is kicking butt. And because Apple's kicking butt, I don't really think that very many of us feel like we're dealing with a sinking ship and, you know, feeling like the underdog as much as we were. And so yeah, I think we can shed some of that.
I also get the impression that one of the reasons that Mac users feel like they have a lot more freedom than before, there's that sense of the Mac does everything. It's good at being a Mac. It's good at doing all the stuff that Apple advertises. But then it also plays well with the PC. It also plays well with Unix networks. It's built on standard hardware. It has standard ports in it. So you can connect to the whole world of mice and keyboards, and you don't need someone to make an ADB keyboard in order to use it with your computer. The move to industry standards, and that was a decision inside of Apple, gave the sense that even if, you know, Microsoft can do whatever it wants, it can have whatever market share it wants, as long as I can walk into any business with my PowerBook and I can still communicate with the network, get my email, do the things that I need to do, because it plays well with all of the standards that are out there, in addition to doing all the other things I like that it does because it's a Mac.
And the question?
Oh, the question is, does that make sense?
Well, absolutely. Sure. Yeah, Apple's done a terrific job of making us not be the redheaded stepchild. you know, and I mean, that's huge. And I think that that's been a big part of their long-term strategy also. You know, their current commercials, for the life of me, I can't remember what the series is the commercials is called right now, but the new ones that star...
Get a Mac?
Thank you. The Get a Mac series. And one of them is they specifically say that because the Mac can run Windows via boot camp, that you can pretty much say that a Mac is the only computer you'll ever need. And you know, it's not just because it'll run Windows. It's because Apple has done such a great job of making the Mac OS, OS X, work well in a Windows environment. So, yeah, it's good. Yay.
Now, what about the relationship between Apple and Microsoft on a business-to-business level? Given the existence of the iPod, the fact that Apple is increasingly getting revenue from software, the existence of Boot Camp, the fact that if you buy a Mac, you might still pay Microsoft to buy a copy of Windows, the fact that it runs its own music store, all of these things, does that mean that Apple is still a competitor with Microsoft?
Yeah, Apple is still very much a competitor with Microsoft. There is, you know, the fight over, let me rephrase that, the platform war of today is the iTunes versus Windows Media platform war. That is a huge deal. But you're really kind of asking me about computers, am I correct?
Well, I'm asking you about the companies. Are the companies competitors?
The companies are absolutely competitors. And the fact that Microsoft can make an enormous amount of profit for the Mac business unit doesn't change the fact that the rest of the company is very much competing with Microsoft. But, you know, now that you mentioned that, you kind of sparked a thought in my head. It'd be very interesting if Bill Gates was the reason why the Mac business unit has gotten so much support internally. I don't know that to be the case one way or another, but it would be interesting if his departure eventually meant that the Mac business unit stopped getting so much support and you know, was perhaps even put out to pasture. I kind of doubt that, in that Microsoft does make a lot of money off of us.
us being Mac users and the product presumably being Microsoft Office.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned this, but I think it's worth highlighting. You're saying that the platform wars of today are the AAC or the Apple AAC Fairplay versus Windows Media.
Yeah, let's call it what it is.
File format war.
iTunes versus Windows Media.
Fair enough. And that's really a battle. It's not a battle over music stores. It's a battle over who's going to have control of media distribution for the next whatever it is, 10, 15, yep. 20 years.
That's precisely what it is. And you know, Microsoft has always been absolutely paranoid about any time any kind of market reared its head, Microsoft had to control it, and whether or not there was any money to be made. I mean, Microsoft gave away Explorer in order to put Netscape out of business, and they were found guilty, of course, of being a predatory monopolist, which coincidentally or subsequently the Bush administration turned around and gave him a slap on the wrist and, you know, gave that entire case away. But I mean, the point being that the company chose to take a money-making profit, which was Microsoft Internet Explorer, and give it away in order to own the market rather than make a profit on it. So they are obsessed with absolute control. And what you said is definitely hitting the nail on the head. This is about controlling media distribution, and Microsoft wants to be the person that can, or the company that controls that.
Now, that is, I think, to a lot of people listening to this show, that idea of a Windows Media universe is probably terrifying to a lot of the people listening to this show, which is recorded in MP3, it's encoded in MP3, an entirely open format. I'm curious, my next question, this lines up against what you said dramatically. Is there any reason? I mean, in the 90s, there was venom, there was vitriol everywhere whenever you ran into a Mac user and brought up the subject of Microsoft. I was talking about this a little bit before, but is there any reason now that the Mac seems to be able to find its own way as a platform? The fact that the iPod exists is an entirely new platform. Is there any reason for Mac users to retain that venom at this point? Or can we start to chill out a bit and say, hey, look, this is a platform we like. This is the one I'm choosing. Other people can do whatever they want. I'm going to move on with my life.
Well, you know, that's probably good advice for all of us no matter what. And it's probably good advice for all of us on a number of things in our lives. But, you know, metaphysical issues aside, I think that what we're seeing right now, what we think of as the norm right now, has really only been the norm for the last couple of years. And Apple still has a lot to give up. It's Apple's battle to lose at this point in terms of iTunes versus Windows Media. So we'll see if Apple can hold on to that. But for now, certainly, you know, like I said, Apple's... Well, I don't want to repeat myself. I think that, yes, folks can sort of give up on a lot of that. Microsoft might have won the platform wars, but Apple has turned around and showed that it really doesn't matter.
And at the moment, we seem to have a platform in terms of music and music distribution that's working out a compromise. And we've talked about this at length on another show, the whole DRM debate and whether or not we're finding the right place when it comes to media distribution. But there is, at the moment, there is a compromise that exists between total control existing with intellectual property copyright holders and with end users and fair use advocates. There's a compromise that's been worked out, and by and large, the marketplace seems to accept that compromise.
Yes.
So, and so that as well seems to be at least a semi-stable situation, and lends itself to that relaxing a little bit.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's switch gears one more time before we start to wrap this up. I'm curious to take a look at this, just looking at Apple now. We looked at Microsoft and Apple. Let's talk about Apple. A lot of people, as I was looking at comments before we started recording this show, a lot of the people that commented on this said, you know, if Steve Jobs were announcing his pseudo-retirement right now, the web would be in an uproar over this. It would be a very big deal. Is that true? Would people lose their minds if Steve Jobs said, I'm going to kick back and not really work so hard at Apple anymore?
Yeah, I think it would be a very big deal. It would be a very big deal for Apple. Be a very big deal for the Mac platform. Be a very big deal for the iPod platform. You know, Steve is the creative vision at Apple. Apple has a creative vision. Most of that vision is being guided, even if it's not originated all by Steve. It is being guided by Steve. I know that when we talked about this a little bit before the show, you talked about the fact that Steve Jobs doesn't dot every I. But the reality is that he decides which I's are going to be dotted. and I mean that's the absolute truth. So without a similar creative genius in terms of vision and you know, like or love Steve Jobs, he does have a knack for you know, figuring out which products are going to be successful.
Now, by the way, you said like or love. Are those my only two choices? Oops. When it comes to Steve Jobs?
Like, love, hate, being indifferent about Steve Jobs, whatever you think of Steve Jobs.
There it is.
He has nailed a lot of home runs for Apple. So yeah, it'd be a pretty big deal if he were to leave Apple. And he will eventually, of course, leave Apple.
Now, you mean he's not immortal?
Yeah, he's not immortal.
That'd be really weird.
Yes.
I was going to say that'd be sweet, but it'd be kind of weird.
It'd be a bad thing.
I wanted to ask you about other executives at Apple. I mean, you talked a little bit about Steve Ballmer and maybe some of the people that surround Bill Gates. Steve Ballmer impression?
That was my Steve Ballmer impression. Not a very good one, but it gets the point across.
There are people other than Steve Jobs that work at Apple. And like you said, a number of them presumably provide Steve Jobs with ideas about products to do or ways to execute.
Absolutely. Steve Jobs is not inventing everything at Apple, by no means whatsoever, but he's steering everything at Apple. There are some brilliant people at Apple.
And that's my question. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what we know about, and of course, Apple is an incredibly secretive place. Everything, when Steve Jobs presents a product, he presents it like it came out of thin air. But is there anything we know about the executive team at Apple, the heir apparent, or where ideas come from, or what the way forward might be if Steve Jobs were to step aside?
There's no heir apparent because Steve Jobs has not indicated anything about stepping aside. And quite frankly, I think when Steve Jobs wants to leave Apple, if and when the day comes that he wants to leave, the if being whether or not he's immortal, he will probably start grooming someone. Hold on.
Gesundheit.
Ah! Wow. That was a sneeze. Okay. If and when Steve Jobs decides he wants to step down, and again, that if part is all about whether or not he's immortal, he'll probably want to groom some kind of heir, I would think, or maybe it'll even be the presence of someone that could take over that would, you know, allow him to leave. He's got his own control issues, different than Microsoft's control issues and Bill Gates' control issues. But there is no heir apparent at all, I don't think. And we've had some people that I think that could possibly have been, you know, nominees for taking over the company that have recently left. But I'm going to dismiss that part of your question. What was the rest of it?
Well, I guess the final question in this sense is, when consumers or when Apple watchers think about what their relationship ends up being with Apple, it's either with A, the product, or with the product announcements for the Apple Watchers, there's a lot of emotion invested in the actual act of the releasing of products, because we at TMO and everyone else on the Mac web and a lot of other people tend to get really riled up when new products come out of that company. On those two things, on the products that come out of the company and on the events that surround those product releases, is there any reason to believe that there is anyone who could replace Steve Jobs or step into his shoes?
No. I mean, no, not at all. Because, I mean, Steve Jobs, a big part of what went wrong with Apple when Steve Jobs left, and I say left, and I kind of put quotes around that because he was really ousted, was that everyone except for some of the top executives were still working as if it was still Steve's company. And, I mean, you know, he's that company certainly is infused with everything that Steve Jobs thinks should be. So if he were going to leave, we would all have to face the fact that Apple would be a different kind of company. You know, even if someone came who felt like Apple needed to continue its secrecy in order to have a competitive edge, they're going to execute it differently. You know, even if they execute it, even if they are able to execute it at all, it's going to be executed differently. And reality is that the board's probably going to end up finding a different kind of person because, you know, there aren't that many Steve Jobs in the world. Like him, love him, hate him, whatever.
And I think that's probably going to have to be the final word, unless, of course, you have any other thoughts. This was officially billed as a thing about Apple, Microsoft, Bill Gates in particular. And I'm wondering if there are any other thoughts, given that we're kind of, at least for the purpose of this show, and the rest of the world can follow, kind of closing the curtain on the Steve Jobs, Bill Gates thing. I'm not going to talk about that probably ever again, certainly not on this show. So is there anything else that you'd like to close out on this subject that you think we haven't dealt with?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, I said I was going to give two examples of Bill Gates' biggest legacy, and I gave a negative one. I'm going to just leave it at that. So his biggest legacy is foisting off an acceptance of good enough when it comes to computers, and that's a terrible legacy. I think, as a matter of fact, I think that his legacy as a philanthropist is probably going to be much more beneficial to the world. I could be wrong, but I think that he's going to have a far bigger positive impact on the world as a philanthropist with all of his ill-gotten wealth than he ever was as the chairman of Microsoft, because I think that Microsoft has been a bane to the world and been a very bad thing for the world. So the other thing that I'll bring up is something I've written about it a couple times. I wrote about it for Mac Addict back in 2003, but I was able to meet with Steve Capps at the AppleLore reunion of Apple employees that the Computer History Museum in the Bay Area held back in 2003. And he gave me just a fantastic story about what's wrong with Microsoft. And to give folks some background who might not remember Steve Capps, Steve Capps was one of the primary engineers on the Newton team and was also on the original Mac OS, the very first Mac OS team, and is kind of a smart guy.
And for anyone who may not know what the Newton was, it was a handheld. It was a PDA in the mid-90s.
Yeah, early mid-90s. That
Apple made.
That really finally came on into its own when Steve Jobs was able to pull the plug on it because it was John Sculley's idea. But that's another issue, too. Steve Capps famously went to Microsoft. And he famously went to Microsoft basically because he felt he could make a bigger dent in the world there because Microsoft was bigger. And when I talked to him, one of the things, and this is not something he said exclusively to me, I know he said it in other interviews, and I think he may have said it in a book, but what he was saying to me back in 2003 was that if Rip Van Winkle went to sleep in 1984 and woke up in 2003, he could use a Mac without any problem. But if that same person was, if he had been a Microsoft user, a DOS user, and woke up in 2003, he wouldn't know what to make of Windows. So who's changed the most? And his question behind that was, so is Apple Was Apple so good in 1984 that you know, no change has been needed, or is it the company's been stagnant? Well, I think he's got a really good point there, and certainly I think Apple is finally starting to break away from that legacy. I think that Mac OS X is making you know, a lot of headway in making things easier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't want to focus so much on that. But he talked about the difference between the way Apple and Microsoft develop products, and he told me, I can tell you exactly why Apple products come out so good and Microsoft products come out so bad, and that was a quote. At Apple, nobody sits down and says, this is what we're going to ship. The product is the god to which we all pray, right? No, so he's saying that no one sits down and says, this is what we're going to ship. Everybody's working on the product, and he told me that at Apple, at least when he was there, you know, five people might be working on the same product, and if one of them saw that his direction was wrong, he would happily chunk it and go work with the other guys because what they were doing was better. I don't know that that's the truth, but that's what he said. And he said, at Microsoft, the schedule is the god. He said, at Microsoft, the schedule and the plans are the god. Nobody has a vision. They get to this mediocrity because nobody's willing to stand up and say, you know, we shouldn't do this at all. So the situation he described at Microsoft is that because everybody's bonuses are predicated on ship dates, that no one is willing to stop a product. And in addition, everybody's at Microsoft is working on this little piece, and they're not working on the whole. And what he hoped to change a lot of this stuff at Microsoft, but didn't stay very long because he found that he couldn't change this because that was their entire culture. So is that something that might change with the departure of Bill Gates? Maybe, but it's going to take someone, dare I say it, like Steve Jobs, to come in and totally remake the company. I think that's really the only way Microsoft would ever change, is to have a new personality, a new Bill Gates or a new Steve Jobs come in and change it all.
And otherwise, I think we're going to have to leave it.
No, I want that. To keep talking. I want to keep talking for hours.
Well, you. This is a special edition, man. This could be a 3-hour episode of the Roundup.
Yeah, that would be lovely, wouldn't it? Thank you very much for your time, Ricky. I certainly appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and it's great to have you on the show. And it's always great to give you an open field in which to
ramble.
To ramble. I was going to say prance, but that seemed
prance. That'll work too. I like that. I like that. I'll leave that to the listeners.
To envision.
Imagination, yes.
Right, exactly. All right, thanks for coming on the show, Brian.
Thanks, Ricky. Have a great day.
And that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. This podcast was downloaded from Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom for TMO. Don't forget the Podcast Expo is coming up in the fall. Again, thank you all so much for voting. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for being around here, sending me comments, sending me emails, sending me thoughts about the show. It's July. It's going to be a great month. Stay subscribed, everybody. And starting with next week's show, I'll be back online.